Come to order. Good afternoon. This is the meeting of the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee for April 8th, 2010. If people would please take conversations they have outside the room. There's a large lobby area that will accommodate that so we can conduct the meeting here. Thank you. We have a meeting agenda previously distributed. There's an amendment we want to make to that. I'm going to propose that it be taken up under item B, call it B1, which will be the consideration of a resolution that Mr. Giancola will present concerning tracking of safety findings and recommendations by oversight agency. If there's no objection, then I'll ask we amend the agenda accordingly. Hearing no objection, the agenda is accepted as amended. We also have the minutes of the March 11th committee meeting that have been presented. Are there any comments or questions? Is there any objection to accepting the minutes as presented? Hearing none, by unanimous consent, the minutes are accepted as presented. Which brings us to our regular agenda, beginning with item 3A, which is the safety and security report. Mr. Sarles, I understand Chief Taborn will be presenting this.
Correct.
Good morning, Chief. Mr. Chairman, and other members of this committee. I will take you through the safety report and then eventually turn it over to Chief Lee, who will talk about the security information. Again, today I would like to just briefly highlight you on some of the actions relative to safety that WMATA has taken. We continue to work diligently with the local and departmental and the executive safety committee meetings. Although listed last year and already reported in the media, I'd also like to take this opportunity to inform this committee and others that the WMATA will have its chief safety officer, Jim Dorey, at the next committee meeting, and I look forward to having him here. He should be arriving on the 19th. He comes to us, as you well know, from San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency and has over 20 years of experience in the transit safety world. I have developed a corrective action plan as requested by the board in response to the FDA's special audit report, and I will share that a little later. We will also continue to meet and work with the Tri-State Oversight Committee to address all open corrective actions and safety items, and they too are here today as part of the agenda to talk about activities that they are continuing to work on. We also continue to work on the roadway worker protection, which is the result of an audit that came about from the Federal Transit Administration and sort of addressed some of the activities that were observed on December 3rd and December 10th in their audit of the road worker protection. And Clay Budding will be here today to assist me in going briefly through some of the activities that are taking place in that respective work group.
All right, good morning. The Roadway Worker Protection Group was formed. It was identified as a top priority for Chief Taborn and Dave Kubicek based on some of the issues that we've had here at WMATA. January 11th to the 13th, we had a partner transit agencies came in and we had a roadway worker safety workshop. We then, after that meeting, developed a Metro Roadway Worker Protection Work Group. February 22nd, we've decided that our Roadway Worker Protection Program would mirror FRA 214. And since then, we've had some follow-up meetings with members of FRA, and we will go out and visit some agencies. The Roadway Worker Group was created to address and identify and address Metro's right-of-way with safety concerns. And our roadway protection program will utilize and incorporate best practices from peer transit agencies and other rail transportation groups.
notes are provided after the meeting, as well as materials and resources are shared via email. And the participants are very motivated, and I think that they're recognized as one group that has worked collaboratively to address safety problems here at WMATA, primarily those that involve the right-of-way protection issues that came about with the unfortunate loss of many of our employees on the right-of-way. Next slide. The Tri-State Oversight Committee did a special safety study, and within that study, they found 18 findings. Findings 4, which is the definition of clear as an example, will be encompassed in the manual and the rule book. Many of these activities that came out as a result of these findings, this work group is working diligently to address all of them. And the most important part is that they're doing it in conjunction with the local 689 as well as the Tri-State Oversight Committee. So everything that's being addressed is in consistent with what the FTA and the Tri-State Oversight Committee have identified. Next slide. Again, the Roadway Worker Manual Subcommittee is working diligently on drafting manuals to ensure adequate safety measures are in place for all persons participating in any activity taking place on the right-of-way. And we're modeling our Road Work Protection Program after the APTA Roadway Work Protection Standards, which were modeled after the Federal Railroad Administration's 214C. And I can tell you that participation from FRA has been very important, as well as the FTA, in working collaboratively to get the best of those things that have been identified as measures that protect those people on the right of way.
Okay. The new Roadway Worker Protection Manual will encompass five new types of protection. The five new types of protection will afford multi-level protection for our workers in the field. It clarifies and focuses the change in work zone control. There's a clear and formal understanding of the accountability of the people out in the field, who does what, the responsibilities and roles of each person in the roadway worker protection. And for the agency to get there, we have to increase our training in this arena. Next slide, please. We've identified, these are the five types of protection that we have identified. They're very similar to the FRA 214C roadway worker protection levels. However, we have modified them for the transit environment. The transit environment is much more challenging with our physical characteristic issues, our throughput of trains, our frequency of trains. However, we've adopted the standard terminology. Our safest mode of protection out on the tracks will now be a protection called inaccessible track, where there is no physical way for any moving piece of equipment to get into the area, all the way down to individual train protection, and that's where one person is using their eyes and their ears to look out for trains and get out of the way. And as you see on the right side of the chart, the top three levels of protection, you stop movements of trains to work, and on the lowest two levels, you depart the track on approach. The right-of-way training will be considerably more focused. We are currently in the process of inventorying and analyzing our existing right-of-way training curriculums. I have to say there are many training programs here at WMATA. We're doing 95% of this stuff already. The intent of this new training will be to refocus, repackage, and retrain our people in the current modern ways of protecting yourself on the tracks. The new program will be delivered as a tiered program in concert with the new right-of-way protection manual. We are going to come up with standard badging and IDs for employees on the track so that our audit groups or our safety group or our QA group comes out there, they can identify who's doing what and if they have the appropriate level of training at that time. And with the new program, it's modeled after the FTA, the APTA standards. Our training will be modeled after that. We'll deliver refresher training, which will mostly be annual training, some biannual training. All of our folks who come out to WMATA will now have to enter the right-of-way during the right-of-way training to see what it's like to be out there and to get full familiarization with the hazards associated with being on the right-of-way. A contract for awarding training should occur shortly, maybe not next month, because we're still working through where we're going with this issue and the level of training from our Delta of where we are to where we are going. FTA has a program, a grant where they will be giving us resources, and Metro will be the first group in line with the FTA training to get that training delivered. And this effort includes Boyd Canton Grant and Zeta Tech, who are known railroad industry professionals. This chart represents a quick summary of our present Metro right-of-way program and our new right-of-way worker protection program, which meets or exceeds the APTA or industry standards. And I won't read it word for word, but basically it's the things we've already talked about. The roadway worker in charge will now control the road work zone that he works in. There'll be multi-layer protection, and only a qualified roadway worker in charge can lead the lead work crews or escort contractors. The training will exceed the present training. It will be multi-tiered with multi-levels of qualification, with retraining and requalification every 12 months for the key critical functions of the Roadway Worker Protection Program.
Thanks very much, Clay. But it's indicative of approximately 20 members, employees from a variety of different departments that have come together, all with the common goal of making sure that our Roadway Protection Program and the people that work on the tracks are all safe and secure. And we are always searching to make sure that we have the best of the best. And I commend the efforts of this work group and thank them very much. The next slide is an example of something that's happening in the Metro Bus Station Performance Highlights, and it's an effort to make sure that the workers that are here can move items in a safe and efficient manner, looking at ergonomics, less back strain, easy to move, things of that nature. The next area is the Metro Access, and I don't know if Jack is here. You want to talk about what we're doing with the drive cam.
Department of Access Services. Since the inception of the new paratransit contract in 2006, all of the Metro Access dedicated vehicles have been equipped with a device called DriveCam. DriveCam is a digital video capture device that has a forward and rearward looking lens that captures events that are triggered by specific parameters, forward or lateral force, shock, G-forces, excessive braking, acceleration, and so on. The device is on all the time. It is triggered by any one of these parameters being crossed, the thresholds, and a clip is saved 10 seconds before, 10 seconds after the triggering event. Daily, any captured events are uploaded into a central system and reviewed by the vendor and our contractor. Those that require corrective action are sent back divisions, and we use this mainly as a training and preventive measures tool. If we can identify unsafe behavior and bad driving habits early on, we can retrain people and fix them before they become incidents. The program has been very successful. There are many, many large systems that use this, and I believe our new Chief Safety Officer will be coming in can speak more about this as well, because he successfully implemented it in Muni several years ago. Our new vehicles that just came in under the stimulus program also have a newer generation of this camera, and which also captures audio and gives you vehicle telemetry as part of the readback when there's an incident as well.
Yes, Ben.
Is it possible for these cameras to be used randomly in addition to triggered by certain events, or is there enough capacity?
The way the device is set up is specifically triggered, but it can be used manually as well in the case of an emergency. The driver has an emergency trigger button that he or she can trigger, and it will record at that center point 10 seconds before and after. We actually have a couple of clips we can show you so you can see how
I'm actually looking for something else. I was wondering whether it is possible for recordings to be made where the driver is not aware that the recording is being made, so that you can monitor driver is working with the passengers. Another training opportunity.
This device is not more of a real-time device like you would have with a CCTV camera, for instance.
Not even CCTV. Can we do recordings? Say
only if it's triggered by an event crossing.
Nothing other than triggering by an event.
Correct. We have a couple of seconds. We can show you a couple of clips that will show you exactly what this looks like from the analyst's point of view and what we use in training. This is a multi-car incident that took place a couple of years ago. You see some aggressive driving going on here. The bus driver's reaction. He actually rear-ended the car that was just to his 11 o'clock. But this device can also be used in accident investigation to help determine whether or not the driver's at fault or did anything unsafe as well. I personally use these devices in other companies and was able to determine fault or innocence, if you will, just from something like this. There's another clip here that shows a good evasive driving maneuver. This is a Metro Access clip from downtown. Notice the arrows on the street. Driver stops short, avoids collision, and basically the forward momentum triggered the event. Driver is not aware of when an event is triggered.
Thank you very much. And one of the requests that came from this committee the last time we met was to give an update on those recommendations that came about from the most recent audit that was conducted by the FTA against the Tri-State Oversight Committee and WMATA. And this request was by Senator Mikulski and Secretary LaHood, and it assessed the Tri-State Oversight Committee's implementation of 49 CFR 659, and the final report on this was released March 4th. Within the documents, it is indicated that WMATA will have to have a response back to FTA by May 4th. So of the findings, there were 11 findings that were provided to the Tri-State Oversight Committee. I'm pretty confident that Matt Bassett will be covering some of those, and 10 recommendations that were directed to WMATA. And those recommendations focused on the weaknesses in the implementation of the system safety program plan, looking at staffing, technical skills, and the authority of the safety department. Recommendation number one spoke about the assessment, the need to have an assessment that looks at the safety department, looks at its capability, looking at how it implements the system safety program plan, determining whether or not you have sufficient technical expertise within the safety department. And the ask was to deliver a final report to include the needs and recommendations. We have completed a statement of work for contractor support, and we intend to provide this final report and this particular assessment to be completed by the end of August 2010. What's important about the way that the recommendations and the corrective actions are relegated, we have to submit these corrective actions to the FTA in this case, it was a joint type of audit. And within the corrective actions, we have to identify the findings, we have to identify the actions that were taken, we have to identify the timelines in which this will be completed. And one other piece that's not here is who's going to be responsible for that. Once we submit that to the FTA, they then will approve it and hold us accountable for the closing out of that particular recommendation. The next slide speaks to staffing and experience. Also, with this assessment, the contractor will ensure that adequate staffing is identified, or if it's not, they will identify the needs for certain things. And they'll look at how we interact with all of the various departments, operating, maintenance departments. They will look at the subject matter expertise in all of those areas. And again, this activity will be completed by the end of August 2010. The next recommendation speaks about information sharing, how we within the WMATA sort of share information relative to safety, operating, maintenance, things of that nature, having a system in place that we all know what's going on, that we all can look at trends and use analysis to determine what is the best action to take. This too will be something that, working with Dave Kubicek and other members within the agency, we've already established this interdepartmental working relationship. addressed many issues that have been contained within the audit. We hope to have this completely done again by August 2010. Recommendation 4 talks again about communications, having a process that we can populate a system that we all know what's going on in the system, if in fact there are some trends that we can relate to that each independent department can assess and determine if in fact actions need to be taken. We also have already underway a web-based tool that's been looked at primarily for the bus department, but we also have met with the Standing Safety Executive Committee meeting on a monthly basis. This is one of the agenda items to make sure that this is moving forward. Again, this is by the end of August 2010 that we will have this recommendation completed. Number 4 speaks to the general manager's coordination. This is actions that have already been in place. We meet weekly with the general manager, and that has already been established. The general manager participates in the Standing Safety Executive Committee, along with the Tri-State Oversight Committee, along with other executive leaders within the department, as well as the 689. Meetings with the general manager have already taken place with the Tri-State Oversight Committee. An agreement has been made that to have this on a monthly basis. Again, we provide the general manager with monthly reports, and within the system safety program plan, it's imperative that we record and document these relationships and these various standing committees. We will have this revision to the system safety program plan by April of 2010. Recommendation number 6 talks about hazards analysis. How do we as an agency determine what may be insignificant today, but it's repetitive, and how that we can look at it from the standpoint that what is happening today may very well be the accident that's waiting to happen a year from now. So many transit agencies have difficulties in having a hazardous analysis program, and we are working diligently, again, with the contractor to develop this process. Next recommendation is number 7, update the system safety program plan. This is what one would consider the book that guides everybody's involvement within the organization, to include the board of directors, the general managers, everybody that works for WMATA. It is the understanding of the system safety program plan that we quite often audited on and found to be deficient. We have a very good program plan, but the implementation of that is not consistent. So we're working to do that better, to incorporate quality assurance, internal safety audits, everything that's asked to be conducted in that system safety program plan. Recommendation number 8 talks about rule changes, and this is the work that's being done by the Roadway Work and Protection Work Group, looking at all of our rules, all of our procedures to make sure that they are consistent, that they are not contradictory, that they don't create problems for us. And so we're working in conjunction with the Tri-State Oversight to make sure that if there are rules that we have on the book that aren't applicable, we need to get rid of those rules because it creates more of a problem than it sort of provides security. So we're looking at that. That too should be completed by September, and then the printing of that document will be underway. Recommendation number 9 speaks about the Road Worker Protection Program, which Mr. Clay Bunning just talked about, and all of the work that's been done already in that effort, and it's a very good work product that they are developing. Recommendation number 10 speaks about configuration management. How do we track and control the documents that speak to the things that we're supposed to be doing? And we were, again, identified as being deficient in this particular area, and working with the contractor to develop an action plan that will identify how we track, record, document information. We feel that we will satisfactorily complete this by 2010. The next series of findings were those findings that were issued to the Tri-State Oversight Committee, but they were also involved with WMATA. So we've already started the coordination with the Tri-State Oversight Committee to address these issues. Again, the response to the Tri-State Oversight Committee as well as FTA is due back to them May 4th. Recommendation number 5 requires WMATA to complete in a timely, thorough, and competent review of the safety rules and procedures manual. That is something that I spoke about earlier. The next recommendation, 6, requires WMATA to develop and talk to review and approve an internal WMATA safety audit. How we internally find out what we are doing in a safe and efficient manner, and we should have the opportunities to independently, in a variety of different departments, sort of test to make sure that we are doing safety in the most efficient way in accordance with the system safety program plan. The next recommendation is to require WMATA to develop a recovery plan to complete all open accident investigations in accordance with TOPS program. We're working diligently over the course of many years. Many people have come and gone, and we have to recreate how we responded to a particular investigation of an accident. And we're working diligently with the hopes to, within, what do we say, Dave, about 2 to 3 months, you know, pretty much knocking out all of those corrective actions. The next slide is work with WMATA to ensure that there is a process in place for evaluating corrective action plan alternatives. And Dave, in his experience through other transit agencies, we may have submitted to the oversight agency one recommendation that today does not make sense. So they're open and accessible to understanding that if we were to come up with a different recommended practice, then we could follow that. And so we're looking at all of those previous open corrective actions to make sure that it's consistent with what we now know. And finding 10 requires WMATA to develop and implement what I talked about earlier, system-wide hazard management program. And again, we are very confident that through the efforts of 689, TALK, and our consultants, that we will get this issue addressed as well. And we had indicated that we would respond back to the FTA by April 23rd, even though the response gave us up until May 4th. We also believe that we could have a contract award by June 2nd and the safety assessment underway by June 15th. So what we're looking at right now, the category of about $4 to $5 million to do all of these things that we need to do, the assessment, the action plan, the safety system database, the hazard management process, internal management process, configuration management, the review, printing of the system safety program plan, training, which is something that's being worked on by one of the other committees that may be in addition to this amount of money, because it's going to require us to, on a consistent basis, to have training, recertification for all of our employees at some particular level. And I think that that's it.
All right, thank you, Chief. Questions, Mr. Jinkel?
Thank you, Chief, for a very, very thorough report. Although I blinked, I must have missed the A one of the report you had here. So it seems like we missed that one, but we went right into B, I guess, on the agenda.
We went seamlessly from A into B.
Yeah, but which is fine. You know, I think this was certainly more.
No, I haven't addressed the B is the TOC, and the TOC is here.
All right, well, yeah, but didn't we talk about TOC things here?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's reporting out all the things that we're all doing, right. And we have TOC that matches here.
Yeah, but very thorough, and thank you certainly for the report and your efforts in the last few months in this challenge. Some earlier question I had on the roadway worker protection program that Mr. Bunning was talking about. I'm a little concerned about there was no timeline shown in that and when we will be able to reach all of our employees. And then I really am curious to ask you about the fact that are we dealing with it from crew point of view? Now, we're not doing a stovepipe training. We're doing cross crews that work on track work, not just down the stovepipe individual shops and stuff.
Right.
And I'm very concerned that we need to be doing this training with crews together
We're doing the entire universe of everybody who has access to the right of way, working again in conjunction with David.
But the training is going to be done with the whole crew.
Absolutely.
All the crews, not just the one type crew that may be in that functional area. Do I understand what I'm saying?
As well as contract employees.
Yeah.
Everybody that's going to be on the right of way will receive that training.
If I could expand a little bit on this overall training, it's not just the, say for instance, the track individual. We're also going to be working with our train control individuals. We're going to have plant maintenance involved, ELIS, or elevator escalator. Anybody that potentially needs access to the working on the railroad in one form or fashion is included in this entire overview.
Okay, what will be the time frame of getting all our employees?
Right. Previously, this was a separate and distinct audit report, and we have already responded back to the Federal Transit Administration and talked with the timelines consistent with the findings and the recommendations and the timelines and the person who's responsible, and I can pull that up. That is also on our website, so as well as when we complete these recommendations and our responses, they will be on the website with respect to the timeline. So I can pull you the previously submitted corrective action plans for those road worker protection audits that the Tri-State Oversight conducted with us.
The only other question I have relates to some of the timelines on the recommendations that you outlined in your report, and obviously September, August are a number of months away. I'm presuming some of those will be done before then.
Well, we're working diligently, and in fact, it's an accelerated approach because we want to make sure that every time we change one way of doing things, it's a trickle effect, and we want to make sure that it's completely comprehensive, that it's consistent with our system safety program plan, that we identify we have the right people at the table so that you indicated that it would be a stovepipe, so people would know without any uncertainty their duties, roles, and responsibility as it relates to safety. And so it's a comprehensive process, and it's a process that does include a thorough assessment to find out where the gaps are, where the places that we don't do a great job of communicating, where the disconnects, where is it that we don't share the information that is beneficial to operation, but at the same time it's beneficial to safety and other departments. So it's a comprehensive, fast-paced approach.
Let me ask you to clarify something in this report, which Mr. Giancola said seems to be pretty thorough, but which members have not seen until just now, so it was not provided to us and it was not on the agenda, so I'm looking at it for the first time. It seems to me there's two basic parts to this. One part is the, I guess it's 10 recommendations, response to the 10 specific things that the FTA directed to WMATA.
They recommended to WMATA.
And said, tell us, you know, report back by May 4th,
right.
60 days from the issue. The other part has to do with a parallel set of findings that were issued to the TOC.
Right.
And it happens that a set of those actually involve WMATA doing something.
Right.
So you're reporting on those as well,
right.
Although those are really ultimately the TOC's responsibility to FTA.
Right.
But you have to have something done addressing these 10 issues directly by May 4th.
Telling them exactly what the game plan will be.
What it is you're going to do to respond to each of those.
Absolutely.
Things. When and how will that formally be issued to FTA?
It will be issued in the form of a letter. Previously, the same type of letter that we reported on with the road worker protection study that was done that identified 18 findings at that particular time. And we, in those 18 findings, provided 8 corrective action plans to address the 18 with the time frames with the person who's responsible for ensuring that that gets carried out. The Tri-State Oversight Committee at that particular point in time will accept and approve those corrective actions. And then the next step is to hold us accountable for the delivery of that, and that is how they close it out.
Okay, but that's all after May 4th.
That's a different finding. I was
right.
Just giving you an example of the process.
I'm just asking you what happens now to comply with the 60-day stricture you have that relates to these 10 things.
Ten things that were listed. The only piece that's not consistent with what is required is the person who's responsible. So that is what the FTA and TOC are looking for right now. Tell me what it is that you're going to do and when you're going to do it, and submit that to me by May 4th.
So basically, what they're going to get is an amplification of what you heard today.
Absolutely.
In terms of this is what our plan is.
I'm having a little difficulty hearing. I'm sorry.
What they're going to get is an amplification of what you see here,
okay.
Describing what our plan is going forward,
uh-huh.
When we're going to deliver it, who's responsible for it. That's
it.
What they're going to get.
That's what I thought I understood.
Right.
So in what form are they going to receive it?
In the form of a letter and a matrix, similar to the last information that we shared on the previous audit.
So there'll be a formal report that has, I mean, this presentation will be turned into an actual report.
Absolutely.
That'll be sent to them.
Right.
that going to be brought to the board for its, I mean, the letter itself, I would presume should come from the chairman of the authority.
I would think it comes from the general manager, but that's up to you.
In the past, that's where it's come from, the general manager.
All right, well, I just, you know, say, I think if this is a formal response of this body to a federal agency, that I would imagine it would come, I mean, this committee review is good, so we get a look at what this is, but I would think that it would come in some form to the board to authorize, that whether it's the chairman or the general manager sending it, issuing it off, and, you know, putting some kind of imprimatur on what it is to be issued in the name of this agency.
From the CEO, the general manager, that has been the thing that we've been doing since 1997. And maybe someone from the top can look at their rules and statements to see if, in fact, it has been done differently.
I don't know what's been done in the past, and it's not something necessarily to be determined today, but since the chairman of the authority is sitting here, I will say that I think you ought to be thinking about what it is our role as the board, the governing body of this authority, is in responding to these issues that are being raised. Some way taking cognizance of them besides having the courtesy of a presentation on what's going to be in it when it's issued. It does seem like it's kind of a big deal, and I think that the board has some responsibility to it. Other questions? Members of the committee members, Mr. Graham.
Thank you. I'm very concerned about the increases in robbery. Theft with force or implied force, page 30, where we see this is virtually doubled. You know, and I, you know, we have got to get a handle on this issue, and in a very serious way. You know, we've got people who are armed and dangerous and committing robbery. This is a very, very serious matter, and this escalation of the incidence of robbery is got to be a great concern to us. And, you know, satisfying ourselves with the very low level of criminal activity system-wide, considering total ridership and everything else, doesn't address this issue. This continues to escalate. And I've got to know what the authority is going to do about this.
Okay, what we have not yet done is provide the security report, of which Acting Chief Jerry Lee will provide he will share some initiatives that are already underway, and he will explain what constitutes the rise in those types of robberies and who represents the majority of the people who have been committing those types of robberies.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean
so you're
to jump ahead.
Planning to give the transit police?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I thought you had done it.
No, and I was confused as well, Mr. Graham. The agenda apparently was changed.
Well, let's hear the initiative.
Let's
deal with this.
Well, why don't we? I think we'll hear the report, the remainder of the report that covers these matters, and then we'll open it up to discussion.
You ready?
Please.
I understand you're interested. It was my good afternoon, first of all.
Yeah.
My objective was to give you an update on the nuclear summit if you were interested in hearing an update, a brief assessment of what's going to happen this weekend if the board was interested. Committee was interested. Give a couple of minutes.
Take a minute.
Right,
what do we need to know?
Well, I just wanted to talk about our preparedness, sir.
Okay.
Basically, the status of preparedness is very good. We've done internal meetings. We've been plugged into the Uniformed Secret Service from the beginning. We will have one station, which is the Mount Vernon station, will be closed starting on Sunday evening. And we have basically deployed our personnel similar to the 4th of July, basically utilizing all our personnel, but in more of a tactical direction at this point. We also have been coordinating with all the other personnel to ensure, internally, to ensure that our bus rail service will be as seamless as possible, even though they've taken away a north-south corridor that's critical for us at this point. We are in tune with the D.C. Command Center, the Uniformed Secret Service Command Center. We have members in all those command centers as long as the tactical command centers. We have representatives in the JTTF as long as the representative, as well as the representative in the NJTTF also. We're also in tune with the FTA and also TSA. TSA also will have their personnel also on scene working for us. We feel that if anything happens, we will be prepared to respond to it as soon as possible. We have also set up the possibility of setting up an executive time conference call as soon as possible in the event that would take place. And we also are doing a 90-minute update, which will be coming through transit police that will be pushed out to all the personnel, the ELT involved also. We do not anticipate a huge role in this, although we do realize clearly if we have any activity that takes place out there, it's going to be magnified at this point. But our personnel is there as far as security of our rail service, our vent shafts, and all the other events that we take place, to include our rail yards and bus divisions. because there's an increased need for security in those areas.
Okay, but clearly,
yes.
If an incident occurs, an incident occurs, and
mm-hmm.
you have to adjust them. Apart from that,
yes.
the only operational impact that people will perceive is that associated with the Mount Vernon station.
Yes, operational-wise, it will not be open for service. Trains will move through the station.
You're going to be doing a whole lot of other stuff, but our passengers
yes.
aren't going to notice most of that.
Well, the bus problem also. 7th Street will not
related
be available.
To the to
right.
that station closure.
Mm-hmm. And we'll have personnel available on those buses and those routes coming inside also, so we'll also be able to collect intel at every given time.
And we're confident that the people operating on the bus side will know exactly what the changes are that relate to the rail side and vice versa, so the passengers ask, hey, say, Mr. Sarles, a station manager on the one hand or a bus operator on the other, they will be able to good information about what they need to do to adjust their trip.
The we have close coordination, Jack was here, right, with what's going on in the district, as well as coming information being fed from the police department. So as they make changes to the perimeter, which is possible, bus routes will be adjusted accordingly. We've already issued advice about which bus lines will be affected. So people have been forewarned. Frankly, it's going to be tough. But we will adjust the bus routes. People will be out in the field to make those adjustments as the perimeter, if the perimeter changes.
But my question is, you know, on the one hand, there's the operational need to adjust the route. That
mm-hmm.
has its own complications
right.
and difficulties for operation. But the other part of this is how information is conveyed to passengers and whether all the people involved in the operations may come in contact with customers, understand what it is they're supposed to be conveying.
Jack here, because I'd like a little more definitive conversation on that. I know the one thing that will be difficult is things like NextBus, which will not operate properly during this kind of thing, and then Jack can describe the field operation.
Well, we anticipate that it is going to be a challenge to deal with the street closures around the convention center. We are not only going to have the connections through the police department from the command centers to where adjustments to the street closures could take place, also receiving reports from them. We'll have senior people on the street that will see any changes that take place. And we'll have people within bus and rail OCC that will communicate anything that happens on the rail system to get to the bus system so that we can make adjustments. Through our system, we can make announcements on the buses as to all alterations to services as they take place, and we hope that they don't.
I mean, those are obviously some, but limited
right.
value. I hear something about there's a change, and what I thought was going to happen, it sounds like it's not going to work. Did you get that? I don't know. I'm not sure what I heard. Now, I go to talk to somebody.
Right.
The question is, when I go to talk to somebody, are they going to say, yes, you're going to have to go over here for this bus and take that one, or do they say, I don't know?
Well, we're going to try to run their regular service, and in the event that gridlock exists, we're going to have emergency transfers also to, well, we'll have supervisors at all the turnaround points or any major points along the system downtown. We'll also have emergency transfers in the event that people want to get off the bus and get on the rail system and travel through the event to get to the other side to get the buses. We'll have that capability. We've arranged that with rail and has worked very well in the past. It's an emergency transfer that allows for a free transport on the rail system to get to the bus system on the other side.
Recent situation like this,
yes.
As it was reported to me by a customer at the experience, that last part of it worked in that they gave them the
yes.
transfer. The part that didn't work so well was finding out exactly what was going on and what he should do, because a lot of the personnel involved didn't know. So I appreciate the fact that there are circumstances here beyond your control that may lead to things being changed in ways that will be inconvenient and will slow down service. That may be completely beyond your control. Part of this that I am concerned with our focusing on that we have not done as well in the past, because I think for the most part, you guys do the adjustments pretty well as can be expected. But what I don't think is always done as well is making sure that all the people who are involved in it have the information they need and can convey that to customers so customers have an idea what the heck it is they're expected to do now, including possibly walking somewhere.
Right.
And that's the part I think that we need to, you know, if you got to make an adjustment, you got to make an adjustment. If things aren't going to work, they close the street and they close the street on you. Most people will understand that. It's just communicating to them, hey, they've shut down the street, therefore we're going to do this, you need to go over here, or have somebody available to give somebody information.
Well, from the supervisors on the street, first of all, Chief Lee and his folks are certainly going to give us us as many details as we can, any adjustments that are taking place throughout of any event or whatever, so that we can communicate that. Again, we'll have supervisors on the street. We'll have people in the command center. We'll certainly pass on as much information as we can. And I think if gridlock exists, a bus bridge is not the answer. Walking to the next available bus line that's two or three blocks away from the scene will be information that we'll give to customers, and also that they may want to go to another rail line that is not impacted by the situation, depending on what it is. So we'll try to provide as many alternatives, and I think the tennis shoes and the walking is a good alternative in the downtown area.
And again, I understand that you're going to do what you can do. I'm just asking that you be prepared to communicate to customers what that is. If they're out of luck, they're out of luck, because they'd rather know that and know that they should walk somewhere than wind up standing around not knowing what's going on. That's the main thing.
We're going to have senior people in our command center and on the street making all of the right decisions and giving the best advice as we can as the events occur.
Thank you.
I guess one of the pieces I thought I was going to hear you say, Chris, is that that senior command and the command center will be communicating directly with all of those senior folks on the street.
Yes, we have
information.
So we have communication.
That's the piece that
we have that.
People,
yes.
So that they will be
as knowledgeable as we can help. Thank you, Mr.
Rutter.
Questions on that?
If
not,
we'll
move on to the question.
Thank you, sir. Last slide. Just briefly, beginning, we had 3,500 calls in service, basically a decrease. Before I get started, really, I want to preface this. This was the month of the snow, so the numbers are down. I would consider some of this might be considered to be luck. Some of it's good police working at the same time, and one of the components of good police work is luck, and we'll accept that. But here, reduction of 20% of calls that time. We had 100 arrests. We went down as far as criminal activity, citations, 37%. Our bus assaults were down also, and our Part 1 crimes at 6.11, which is down slightly for that amount. Next slide, please. Okay, one thing I wanted to share with the board is there's some activities that took place through the transit police for our emergency management component that took place this month and the last 2 months. Basically, there were drills. There were drills that came from the U.S. money that put out there to make sure that we were prepared to get things done in the event of some type of crisis that took place. The first one that took place basically was an event that took place. The first one that took place up at Friendship Heights basically was an active shooter. The active shooter drill that took place basically found that was very contemporaneous with the Pentagon event that took place. And then in this case, on this one here, we have it followed up with one at Roslyn and another one at RFK. Basically, one of the good things that came out of these things, basically, that we engaged so many levels of government at the time, and we found out that through these drills, we have found out we've got to a component where we're very comfortable and we're operating very well together. We had a primary goal of having no injuries involved in all these drills, and I can say that after all three drills, we had zero injuries related to those things. Regional coordination with public safety was fantastic. The money came from URAC. Next slide, please. Okay, lessons learned, exceptional participation. One issue came up with a new cart that came out, the London cart. They were very effective in their use. One issue came out with one was malfunctioning. That may have the issue to do with the charging of the batteries. But all in all, those new London carts for evacuating personnel worked out very good. The drills were formed, extensive preparation, lots of planning, and they worked out perfectly as far as we were concerned. Communications was one issue as far as multiple agencies coming together. We are trying to look now to get a cache of radios to use on these scenes to deploy in the event of these types of situations that come out. Next slide, please. Okay, lessons learned. Bus explosion. The bus explosion is one that we had happen at RFK Stadium. That happened on the exact same day as the Moscow issue that took place. Therefore, when we got there, we got lots of coverage, and we also got lots of practical experience and people coming in to participate in this.
How do you mean simulated bus explosion?
Absolutely. It was a simulated bus explosion. Once again, the personnel, we did find out one thing. In the event, in the location where we held it, we may have been challenged as far as maintaining a security perimeter at that point, where in that case, we know we have to deal with certain areas such as media and safety and things such as that. So that was an issue we're going to address in the future. And we also found out one of our issues that existed in all three of our drills basically was our command structure. We didn't have a mobile command area. In one situation, we held our incident command over the hood of a car. Although we did exceptionally good, we had exceptionally good weather and coverage at those times, unlike the issues we had in the past where it could have been weather-related, where we would have been really challenged to hold a long-term incident command in those events. So we did identify that as a major concern. Once again, there were no injuries. Another issue that came up, and it came up, I wanted to bring it up here, is because it came up in the media. It talked about rapes that occurred. There was a rape that occurred out in Largo Town Center. And due to the work of several detectives who were working the rape at the time, they had the opportunity to go out and work, and being tuned into what was going made an apprehension for the rape while they were out there. And it basically says that there were, fortunately, there were two rapes that occurred. The suspect had a victim with him at the time, but based on the detective's work and their work, diligent work, and the charges placed on this person, we're quite sure that we're not going to have any problems in the future on this. But there were two rapes. There are two closures in that event. And there was some question that came up about notification as far as the public was concerned. What we did is this happened on, from the time the first one happened in the apprehension, there were 6 days it took place. We had good information. We were actively working that. And then the question came back, the next question came up was, what goes on with the local jurisdictions? How do they report to the media on what occasions? We did research in those areas. We found out there is no hard, fast rule as to when it's notified and the police department notifies the media. What they have done, most places, if they need help from the public, they will put it out in the field. We have since then together made and we're often addressing what we want to do here if we want to have a down fast rule. But as of this point, we don't. We have not had, in this case, a need to have that type of a rule in place. Next slide, please.
I must. Two questions.
Yes, sir.
Number one, Chief Lee, you said two rapes occurred at Largo?
Yes, sir.
Or did two rapes occur, one of which was at Largo?
Well, it's a complicated case, sir. What it was, one rape did occur at Largo, and when we went to make the apprehension, there was another victim with him at that point.
But that victim was not raped on our property, is that right or not?
That victim had been raped on multiple occasions, I guess.
But not on our property.
It was not on our property.
And that's a distinction that the press was having a great deal of difficulty with, because we weren't careful about how we stated it. Only one rape actually occurred at Metro, and you were able to find the person, to arrest the person, and in that process you found that person with somebody else whom he had raped.
That's true.
Which is a distinction, and it's an important one relative to what goes on in our property. I wasn't quite clear on whether you were going to actually do a detailed review of what other jurisdictions actually do for reporting and come back with a presentation to us.
I will do that for you because we've already started. We are almost finished with that at this point. We're developing what we think may be best for us.
Thank you.
One other last question I just wanted to follow up on that was that there were some charging documents that were public records that show there were multiple counts. Therefore, that may have been some of the confusion about the amount of arrest that took place on this point. There were multiple counts from the second victim is what it happened. Okay, just to show some mutual aid and mutual assistance from local jurisdictions, the Gaithersburg Police and Montgomery County Police made some arrests up there, and they worked in conjunction with ICID again. And one time where we had a lot of car break-ins and crimes such as that, we worked together to develop these cases at this point. And this is more of a customer service issue where we're talking about, where we identify our victims from their cases and had the ability to return their property to them also and to show that we are actually working out there and trying to get some good customer service going on. Next slide, please. Okay, next. Okay, okay. I'm going to get to the fourth slide forward, please. Move forward. One more. Okay, this is the slide that Mr. Graham was referring to. I will get to it, Mr. Graham, you're concerned. Basically, this is the part one crime. It's the next slide, yes, sir. Okay, go to the next slide, please. Okay, this is...
this is one. It's the 81 versus the 42?
Yes, sir. In addressing that issue, in the past year, I'm quite sure we've been before you before, seeing there was an influx in robberies that were taking place in the city. Most of them were snatch and run robberies, and I wanted to share with you some of the efforts we've done to address those issues. Just last month, we put together on our webpage a video presentation to tell the public exactly how these things are happening. They're standing in the doorway, people are holding their iPods. We put that out there. In fact, we've got some good response back from Chicago and Atlanta. They're going to probably replicate what we did. We also had handouts went out to the public also to tell them about securing their property also. The other issues we're doing a public awareness campaign also to let people know more about what's going on. Now, the vast majority of these are snatch and run, snatch and grab robberies, which are going on at this time. We have not broken them down here, but I can tell you that there possibly is as many as 90% are snatch and run, and almost no violence associated, not violence, but there are no injuries associated with those areas. We have done other things also, such as initiate redeploy personnel. For example, we have taken some personnel from both of our police districts and put them in the system in a robbery detail situation. We've done decoy in those situations. We've seen spikes in this area where at one point we take our entire SOB Bureau, Special Operations Bureau, and redeploy them to the system for a week just to address these issues. We also have an anti-terrorism team that's out there, which now has been out there since the beginning of the year, and we think we're going to see some impact from that because of the high visibility detail, plus an 18 additional offices generally deployed in the downtown area. So we are still addressing these issues. We're actively working on how detectives are working these cases, and we're finding out that they're young offenders. In most cases, they're not repeat offenders, and they're crimes of opportunity. And what I would share with you sometimes from the time of implementation, from the time of thought to implementation, is less than 15, 20 seconds because they see the opportunity and they're taking advantage of it. Thus, we saw the need to educate our riders as to not to be a victim by standing in the doorways, not to hold these items out in front of you at this point.
Are you seeing any results from that effort?
We are. I don't have next month's stats.
I actually don't have data, but is there any initial sense of whether it's changing behavior?
The actual crime continues to be the same. It is the iPhone, that's what's being stolen each time. So we're making, also instructing our officers to instruct people when they see people in these vulnerable site situations to engage them. The crime is still a crime of choice, I guess, for the young offenders out there in the area because the activity is just so easy to act.
If I asked you if I wanted to do something about this,
yes,
what would you need, realistically, to make a significant
difference? I'll have to think a little bit for the simple reason from the time. The problem is, there's a 15-second crime that takes place. Preparation for a 15-second crime is virtually impossible, although I think it's more education of the public, staying away from the doors, keeping the iPods back down, keeping them outside of your purse, make sure you're aware of your situation again. So
what
I think
about
it's
the
more
presence of police officers?
The presence of police officers always helps us as far as a deterrent, as far as the ability
someone's
to them
less
to get
likely
ready
to try to do this if they know
absolutely
one of your guys in that uniform is standing nearby.
Absolutely.
But you only have so many officers.
That is true.
And a lot of systems.
Should we be impressed or unimpressed that there were only 100 arrests in February? I mean, it seems that you have 3,500 calls for service. You have how many police officers in active patrol?
I think at the request of the board, we provided an executive session, a deployment strategy of the police department, where we identified the rank and file, the various positions that they right.
Unfortunately, I wasn't there when you provided it. I didn't know why it had to be done in secret. You know, because we have deployment, we get regular deployment numbers from MPD.
We can provide you with the deployment numbers, but the strategy is something that's a little bit different. We can tell you exactly how many police officers we have on the department. We can tell you that there are 86 stations, over 1,500 buses, 1,500 square miles, platforms, parking lots. Then when you look at the ratio between the police officers and the activity that takes place, both dealing with the young people at the various school systems where we deploy maybe 5-6 police officers working with Metropolitan Police at any time on any given day of the school at Tinleytown, Minnesota Avenue, LaFont Plaza, various places, there aren't a lot of police officers that will be in the system. But we can give you the breakdown. And I think that's a situation that's confronts many police agencies across the country, especially those in transit.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Benjamin, then Mr. Cole.
It seems like every time you put this chart up, I make the same comment. And I wish we could do something to the chart. I understand these are standard categories and all that, but do something to the chart so that the average person is not misled. Chief Lee very carefully described that robbery on there is not somebody with a gun coming up and saying, I want your wallet and I want all your money. In fact, most of those are somebody who snatches an iPod or an iPhone or a cell phone and runs away. And that's not the same as the image that gets created by the word robbery, which is somebody comes up with a gun and says, I want your money.
Well, it's consistent with what's in the law. And
let me stop you for a second, because Mr. Graham has the same kind of misinterpretation of it that most of us have until we've heard what's going on. Force in this case is grab.
Yes, sir.
It's not push somebody. It's not shoot at somebody. I'm standing there and all of a sudden my iPod is gone. And if we can have something on this chart that makes it clear that this is, you know, snatch and grab, as you said, or something like that, that this is not primarily people with guns coming up and putting the gun in your face, that would be helpful so we don't have to go through this once a month. And the same thing on larceny. Most of those, I believe, are, you know, it says theft without force. Most of those are GPSs out of cars, right? Having something that tells us what the level of these is really, really important, because the vast majority of the crimes on there are things that, yes, we want to prevent those. No, we don't want to have people steal GPSs out of cars, but there's a big difference between stealing my cell phone and putting a gun in my face. And the latter is what's not occurring.
Well, how many are there in the law? How many armed robberies?
Very few. We can give you the statistics on the armed robberies, but what we face and many police agencies, what they report Part 1 crimes to the FBI is the definition of robbery.
We can provide a more WMATA
definition, but it's not consistent.
And I understand. And what I've said before, and I'll say it again, is it is not helpful to us if we're trying to interpret it, if you're giving to us stuff that is in FBI format, but many of us don't understand what that really means. You're trying to communicate to us, not to the FBI.
We'll provide a second shot of robbery snatches or robbery.
Or just identify what you mean by larceny and what you mean by robbery so that those images that go with that.
But why don't we just do this? For the robbery, I mean, these are the standard statistics. I'm certainly used to looking at this. Why don't we just simply for the robbery for the next time just identify which ones were armed robbery and which were not armed robbery?
And I think, you know, some kind of note that says this is all, you know, grabbing cell phones and iPods is. And I think the same thing. The same thing applies to the question which Mr. Graham asked, which was quite reasonable. There are a lot of calls for service, but the vast majority of those are not somebody's trying to rob me. It's somebody's eating on the train, or I'm lost and I need help, or, you know, a whole range of different things.
Well, also included in it, also, sir, when an officer calls in with a stop, it's classified as a call for service. A lot of activities that officers do by definition are called calls for service. So that number is all included in that also.
Mm-hmm. So you aren't going to see very many arrests when a lot of those are giving tickets or something.
Absolutely.
As a result.
And that's a factor that has to be made known as well, because when you factor in the number of police officers, the days off, the sick leave, the court time when there are arrests, and the time that a person is held out, and you add in training, that all factors into the work day or the work week of a police officer out in the system. So we can have people go out and make arrests, and that's what we encourage them to do, but with the paperwork in the various jurisdictions, normally it's about at least 2 hours that police officer is taking off.
You're not saying to us that you don't make arrests because there's too much paperwork.
No.
Okay, thank you.
It's Jake Oliver.
Question, first of all, I'm a daily user of the Metro Rail, and I have actually seen more of our Metro Police out there. And I actually saw this morning the sign you were referring to advising a passenger to be careful about their iPods and such, and I thought that was a pretty effective sign. Although I do have a question, and I've seen this, of the police I see, they're always two together. And so the real question is there some value of considering getting more coverage by not having two, but maybe one individual policeman out there at location? It seems like we could double our coverage if we reduce the size of our crews. In fact, yesterday at the gallery place, I saw a crew of three. So, I mean, I'm just kind of curious in the deployment from that concept.
What we have is we've given our commanders some discretion to deploy them to their office they feel the best way possible. We have some areas where we know we will get serious calls for service every day, almost like clockwork. We also know that our actual response time is based on rail service in some cases. In an emergency or serious situation, that next officer could be two stations away, but he's still 13 minutes away. So what we have done is try to experiment on what's the best way to do this patrol. If I can send these two guys who are already patrolling together, a backup is not necessary. To send a car to back them up is not necessary. Or in certain areas where we know crime is very high in some areas, we know that we're sending people in with their backups already.
looked at that from years ago. We've looked at sending patrolling linearly. We wanted to make sure that we looked at it every way possible. One guy every four stations may be a good idea. Two guys every eight stations may be a good idea. The time of day may be a time when we go two people versus the rush hour is a different time when you may want to change your deployment. So we looked at that. That was a conscious decision to try something different to see if it works for us better. If it doesn't work, we will move. We'll try something different. But that was one of the reasons. We have teams out there also where we're putting out some sweep teams, the ATT teams, the anti-terrorism teams. They were specifically put out there to be high visibility and to respond to things in the downtown core to ensure those issues. So, it's one way of looking at things that we could spread them out, but we have another way of we're deploying now. It's not on beats, we're deploying them moving now. As you may see in our plan here, what we're telling now, during the nuclear summit, our office will be detailed to platforms and moving versus just in the station. Our offices will be detailed in trains physically moving along the lines. So we're trying so many different things. Hopefully we're going to be successful. If we find that they're not successful, we'll modify and we'll try something else. I hope I answered your question.
I'm just kind of curious whether other transit systems do. I mean, do they have teams all the time or do they have separate individual police out there?
Transit agencies, we meet on a biannual basis with the top 50 transit agencies across the country, both safety and security. And there's a variety of different methodologies. Mr. Saul's coming from New Jersey Transit. They do an outstanding job. They have a lot of resources. And they get things done. New York, without question, they have unlimited numbers of police officers. Houston, Dallas, we meet with them and we exchange ideas. And this iPod phenomenon is not one that's germane to Washington because that, too, is happening all over the country. The same thing with the GPS. So we are trending, we're finding the best way to go about deploying our people. We know that at the Gallery Place, Chinatown, that is a location that we have sporting events and many major activities that take place there. We know that on the weekends and in the afternoons that is where we have the majority of our issues with the young people because things happen. And so what was talked about at the last board meeting was to we encourage people to ride along if they want to hear and see what goes on in the day of the transit police and patrolling our system, which we have a very great program that does just that. There's a lot of activity that goes on, a lot of calls for service, and we have a lot of territory to cover, both train, platforms, parking lots, and we try to be every place that we possibly can, and we use the CompStat, we use the statistics to sort of drive where the most crime, criminal activity is taking place, but with limited resources, and no one ever wants to talk about that, but we try to do the best that we can with what we have.
Just quickly, can we have in the future a year-to-date bar chart of some kind to show the pattern of the criminal activity, and maybe have, because I know you have all these
right at
hand, and maybe have a couple of subsequent years so we can see what's happening, rather than just being isolated to a single month.
Right. We can do the year-to-date.
What are we due next to have this report before this committee?
I think it's May. May 13th.
That's when our committee next meet. You're planning to do a crime report at that meeting also?
Yes. Yes, sir.
We're doing it monthly now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, one point we're doing it quarterly. So we're going to do this every month? All right, well, fine. If you can provide that information nonetheless directly to board members, not wait for the board meeting, then it might expedite some things. Are we done with this? I suggest we go to item B. There's also a C and D, by the way. This is the status of the Tri-State Oversight Audit. It relates very much to some of the things we were talking about earlier on the previous item. Let me say first, Mr. Bassett, thank you for staying and waiting. My apologies for how the schedule turned out today. Did I also see one of your colleagues here earlier?
Yes, I'm joined by George Good from the Maryland Department of Transportation. He is our vice chair, and we also have Rob Kogan and Ken Korak from our consultant and Bernadette Bridges of Maryland and Eric Madison of D.C.
Mr. Madison is still here. Thank you very much. Thank you all for waiting
First of all, I want to thank Chief Taborn first for his detailed introduction into the some of the issues we'll be talking about, and also for saving me a little bit of time because he covered a lot of the couple of the things that we want to talk about. If I'll just nod to you when I want to move these forward. Thank you. The first thing we're going to talk about is the status of the major accident investigations that are underway with Metro. As you may be aware, the majority of the really high-profile incidents have been either investigated by the National Transportation Safety Board in conjunction with WMATA as well as TOC, or by a committee of internal WMATA representatives. As you know, under the TOC program standard, the authority to investigate accidents and incidents of a safety nature is delegated from the State Safety Oversight Agency, the TOC, to WMATA. The TOC has not, to my knowledge or in my experience, ever retracted that authority and conducted our own independent investigation, at least in my memory. And so what that means is that WMATA's accident investigation procedures and processes are approved since they are conducting them on our behalf. The August 9th right-of-way fatality is being investigated by a WMATA committee, I believe. They provided their initial report to us. We had a series of questions and comments there, going back and working on that. The same thing for the September 10th. And, of course, the January 26th right-of-way fatalities, the NTSB investigation in conjunction with TOC, WMATA, and there may be one or two other agencies in there, is still going on. One thing that I would add to this that I'll take responsibility for not having added this in time to get it in here is the issue of the March 2nd, 2009 ATP failure at the Potomac Avenue station. That did not result in an accident, quote unquote. This was a near miss in which a car-borne component aboard a Metrorail vehicle failed, leading to a station overrun. It's our information that the car equipment that was responsible is currently still being tested at a laboratory, and we're looking forward to the results of those tests.
One question.
Yes.
One thing not on there is the derailment incident.
Yes, the Farragut North derailment. It's worth pointing out that also is an NTSB investigation, and they are taking the lead on that.
So its status is?
Its status is also open. That was just a significant incident. So,
but if NTSB had not, this would be something you would be dealing with.
If NTSB had not chosen to investigate the Farragut North derailment, that would have been something delegated to WMATA under the usual processes. It is a mainline derailment, so it is reportable to the TOC. It's worth pointing out in that incident, we were notified as appropriate. In fact, two of us, one from D.C. and Emil Smith from D.C. and myself, were actually down there at Farragut North.
Thank you.
Unless anyone has any additional questions on that. Recent and upcoming audits. The first two are recent. The next two are upcoming. The right-of-way safety audit, which the chief covered in detail, is has been completed. WMATA has chosen to adopt the process of essentially developing a standing committee, as the chief went into great detail on, made up of personnel from the safety department, emergency management, various operating organizations. It is a collaborative approach to problem solving that, from an outside agency's perspective, we think that model represents potential solution to a lot of the safety issues that are facing the authority beyond simply the obviously significant but specific issue of right-of-way protection. We've approved all of WMATA's proposed corrective action plans, and we're participating to the greatest extent we can in the right-of-way safety committees, which meet every week. The FTA audit of the TOC WMATA SSO program, the chief covered this in significant detail. As you may know, the FTA does not have the direct authority to issue findings to WMATA directly, only to us, as we are We are overseen by FTA. In turn, we oversee WMATA. So their recommendations and the practice of WMATA responding directly to these FTA recommendations is sort of breaking new ground. We will obviously continue to work closely with WMATA because some of the findings issued to us require action on WMATA's part. The only other thing I would add about the TOC WMATA SSO program is that a number of our specific findings will be addressed by some policy level initiatives which our jurisdictional leaders have underway to add authority and resources and additional legal and administrative improvements to the organization. And that's still in the discussion and evaluation phase, so I can't really go into much more detail than that. The TOC triennial review is set for June of 2010, as of right now. It is every 3 years we come in and do a comprehensive audit, as per 659, of fundamentally whether Metro is doing what Metro says Metro is doing. This will evaluate WMATA's compliance with its own system safety program plan, with its security and emergency preparedness plan, as well as a number of its own internal processes and procedures. We'll also be looking at relevant standards such as NFPA 130 and some of the applicable APTA standards. The last one is WMATA's internal safety and security audits. As the chief mentioned during his presentation on the FTA audit, this was identified as an area that the FTA wanted to see some improvement in. These are the WMATA conducted evaluations of whether or not the agency is in compliance with its own safety and security plans. As you know, the two primary guidance documents are the System Safety Program Plan and the Security Emergency Preparedness Plan. I'm happy to report that the most recent one of these, the internal security audit, which went off yesterday, shows a number of improvements over previous processes that I think represent a significant step forward, but that's progress that will need to be sustained to fully address this, this FTA audit finding. So these internal safety and security audits are ongoing, and we will be continuing to monitor them. I already started mentioning the Right-of-Way Worker Protection Task Force, and without repeating too much of what the chief has already said, I'd like to point out, as I mentioned, it's really a model for how significant safety issues that may in the past have been identified as sort of intractable or inherent to the system can really be tackled, and tackled on a very effective and fast-moving manner. I'd like to share the anecdote of, they mentioned the last Friday there was a workshop in which representatives from the heavy rail agencies such as Conrail and Amtrak showed up to kind of take the temperature of WMATA's right-of-way worker protection initiatives, look at the draft rules, view a very detailed presentation on what the new status of right-of-way protection would be at the authority. And I thought it was very interesting that the representative, I can't remember if he was from Amtrak or Conrail, took a look at it and said, this is really good, but the next step forward is you're going to need to take this to your union and to your frontline workers, and you're really going to need to get their buy-in. And what was really great about that moment was that Clay Bunting was able to turn to him and say, well, you happen to be sitting next to a track worker, and he's a union employee, and he helped write it. And I think that approach is of really getting the buy-in from management, from labor, from various different departments, not just the track department, but the rail operations department, from safety, from emergency management, and from outside agencies like us, has really been very effective. The rule book is obviously very tied in with this. And one of these other initiatives in the same mold as the Right-of-Way Worker Protection Task Force, which is just starting to get off the ground, is something that the chief has named the Corrective Action Strike Team. This would be an internal organization, not just as part of our regular meetings with the TOC, but an internal group that would work together between the safety department and the operating departments to resolve open corrective action plans that do not need to, that with appropriate administrative effort can be closed out. I always like to try to draw the distinction between a corrective action plan that's significantly long term, requiring an investment of capital, time, resources, or simply, you know, just additional eyes on the problem, against something that is really doesn't need to be on there because it hasn't had the appropriate administrative level of effort attached to it. The real push that happened in December that has been, I think, discussed previously really helped to clear the backlog of a lot of those administrative corrective action plans that needed to go and had just been a bit neglected. There's obviously some more work to be done, and we are optimistic that this corrective action strike team will continue to move that progress forward.
What does MSRPH stand for?
Metro Safety Rules and Procedures Handbook. The last bullet point here is the safety management system. This was mentioned previously, but I think it's really worth pointing out that one of our fundamental focuses with the agency is that we want to see an improvement of the way safety information is communicated, whether it's an increased attention to reporting hazards, near misses, potential conditions that might affect the safety of workers or employees of the system, or whether it is tracking incidents that have already occurred. The safety management system is an electronic tool. It's currently being piloted with the bus side, so obviously our TOC involvement in that is not quite as significant, but is planned to roll out to the rail side, in which corrective actions and basic incident investigation information can be entered in an electronic format that is easier and quicker to share among departments. It holds frontline supervisors and managers accountable for the flow of investigation information, and it allows appropriate input and access from various departments like council and human resources and safety and operations to help to get the maximum amount of necessary data in one place so that we don't have the backlog that we currently do of open accident investigations or corrective action plans that need additional information. So we're very optimistic that this safety management system not only will help improve accident investigation, but will help to track reported hazards and near misses. Pretty much already discussed most of this, but as I mentioned, there are policy coordination efforts underway among the three jurisdictions. And you could go past the next one. If you've covered that. Past the positive sections, we're now getting into the areas where we'd like to see some improvement. We continue to be concerned with the backlog of open accident investigations. As you know, the accidents which we require WMATA to investigate are dictated by 49 CFR Part 659 and include the reportable criteria of $25,000 worth of damage or more, two or more people transported to the hospital after a rail transit incident, a fatality within 30 days of an incident on the property, and mainline derailment, collisions. You get the idea. These also include life safety evacuations, which account for a decent number of some of these accident investigations, because every time you have to clear a station out because of smoke, or every time you find a suspicious package and it forces you to shut down access to that station, we consider that to be a life safety evacuation. So some of these are what are considered to be a bit mundane, but we continue to be concerned that the number of open accident investigations, some of which date back to 2006 and 2007, need to be worked on. And to give credit where credit is due, the safety department and folks from some of the operating divisions have been working very diligently on this. And obviously, the FTA audit sets a very aggressive time frame in which it would be preferable for all these to be closed out. However, we continue to be focused on this. Corrective action plans, I already discussed that briefly. It is very important that, partially because WMATA has a number of corrective action plans that need to be resolved from previous audits and accidents and other findings, but also because there have been a number of new ones that have needed to be developed to respond to the right-of-way worker protection audit, as well as an anticipated number of findings from our June triennial review. Obviously, those will have findings and observations which will require a WMATA response. Hazard communication and analysis, we continue to be very focused, and this is a very multifaceted issue. This stretches from the willingness of frontline employees to bring safety concerns directly to their supervisors, to the ability of the Standing Safety Executive Committee to be able to have an appropriate flow of information throughout the agency to allow them to make the decisions that are necessary on system-wide safety concerns. It's very important to us that there is a consistent flow of information being reported from the front lines throughout the organization to the safety department and to management, that there is an effective process in place through which that information is analyzed, that there is a process in place by which that analyzed information can be prioritized, and a consistent manner in which those priorities, those safety priorities, can be acted upon. That may be from ensuring this safety management system has an appropriate flow of information, to increasing to an anonymous reporting form through which employees can report their concerns, to improved coordination between local, departmental, and system-wide safety committees. We're working with WMATA at every one of those levels to try to ensure that this process is improved. And that really dovetails with the final bullet point, which is the Standing Safety Executive Committee. If you haven't seen this acronym before today, this is the policy-level committee which is ultimately responsible for the investigation of major accidents, the disposition of corrective action plans, as well as, and the authority, it doesn't just handle rail, it handles bus and mobility as well. And really, the facilitating the policy level discussion of how the agency attacks widespread safety challenges. In the past, this committee did not have the senior level participation that was necessary, and the committee needed to return or refocus on its responsibilities as outlined in the System Safety Program Plan. The committee is now, I'm happy to say, on the what we consider to be very much the right track for including senior leadership, for addressing the kinds of safety issues such as major accident investigations for which it was originally created, but there is still some distance to go on. The numbers of open accident investigations, this should simply give you a flavor. I warn ahead of diving into this that it is a consistent back and forth in terms of the number of accident investigations which are open, because incidents such as yesterday's unfortunate person struck may be that WMATA may take a week or so to turn the incident report around. That adds to the number of open incidents. In addition, research and evaluation by the safety departments or other organizations may help close out open incidents. So this is the best available numbers we had at the time of putting together the PowerPoint presentation. There may be some flux if we were to go back and look at our database absolutely right now, but I can tell you it would not be significant. There were 50 total reportable, top reportable accidents and incidents in 2009. There have been 14 to date in 2010, that's about a week ago. This is the significant number is that there are 65 remaining open between 2006 and 2010. As you can see, there's 6 in 06, 9 in 07, and you can read the rest of the numbers for yourself. Go to the next slide. Open corrective action plans. As a brief refresher, a corrective action plan must be developed, or a logic or an identified reason for not developing one must be submitted anytime there is an audit finding from us or from any outside agency which conducts an audit, anytime there is a reportable accident or incident, anytime there is a significant hazardous condition reported, or basically anytime the transit agency recognizes that a safety or security problem requires a coherent plan. There are two remaining from the 2004 Triennial Safety and Security Review, 20 from the 2007 one, and all others remaining from other, such as NTSB recommendations, APTA peer reviews, Montezone internal audits, et cetera, there are 65 remaining. So, go on to the next one. That's a number of 87 are currently open. We were able to close out 33 as part of that significant push in December, none in January, two in February, three in March, and I think April will represent some significant improvements based on.
Let me make sure I understand. That number 87 is presumably the sum of the 65 and the 60. Two and the 20 from the previous page.
Yes.
So that's at the close, as of January 2010, when the year began. That 2 and that 65, okay. So that left 87 going into this year?
87 is where we were a week ago when I finally hit save on this PowerPoint.
Okay. But these other numbers then don't figure in that 87. That 87 is after those numbers?
The 87 does not include any of the ones that say closed in any of these. These are simply the points here are simply to give you a flavor of how many we were able to take off the matrix. The 87 number is what remains.
What's left?
Yes.
Okay. So this is a little bit.
The formatting they give you
doesn't really belong on this page at all, right? That
those
line, well, actually would have been good on the end of the bottom of the previous page.
Previous page, perhaps, yes.
This just happens to be what some of the recent things you did to get to 87.
Yes. So perhaps in your mind or on your hard copies, you can say 87 at the bottom of the previous page.
Right. There's 87 things left.
Correct. Yes. Hazard management, we just wanted to take a moment to discuss the specific hazardous conditions that we're monitoring along with Metro and that we want to make sure that their focus continues to remain on. Station overruns continue to be an issue. Obviously, operating the system in manual mode provides a little more opportunity for that occurring. Improper door openings, especially with the opportunity for human error there. And the potential for single point failures within the ATP system continues to be a concern. WMATA is developing with an outside contractor a system to detect these failures. I understand they've already implemented certain parts of this system, and they already have their loss of shunt tool that they're using on a regular basis. But we continue to be interested in the steps that WMATA takes to mitigate this hazard, and we'll be getting more involved over the next few months as they continue to procure that software solution. General program issues, this is the very broad programmatic stuff. The hazard identification and analysis process, I mentioned the flow of information that we want to ensure is occurring. We really want to make sure that frontline employees are empowered to report safety hazards and potential concerns. We also want to make sure that when that information makes it up the chain, that there is an accountable process so that those individuals or supervisors or managers, I don't want to focus exclusively on the frontline employees, have some kind of validation that the information they provided has been seen and has been evaluated. I've made an effort to go out at night shifts and off hours and have discussions with employees in the shops and out of the systems. And one of the things I've found is that they really understand that when they report a safety hazard, there are some things which, based on the practicality of running the second largest rail transit system in the country, are simply not going to get fixed, or at least not right away. One of those would be lighting in the tunnels. Some workers who work on the right-of-way are concerned that there's insufficient lighting. They report that to their supervisors. They know, when they report that given the system's pressing capital needs, issues facing the very real budget issues, which we all heard about this morning, they know that that may not be able to get fixed as quickly as they'd like. However, what they're really looking for is some kind of evidence that the information they provided is being tracked and is being monitored and that someone has evaluated that. So that's one thing that we're really looking for and hoping to see. An ongoing issue that is being attacked by things like the Corrective Action Strike Team and by other initiatives like the Right-of-Way Worker Protection Task Force is the continued need for regular and consistent coordination between the safety department and the various operating departments who are responsible for actually putting the service on the road or on the rails every morning. The safety department, the operating departments are obviously the subject matter experts in their individual areas. However, we want to ensure that moving forward, the safety department has every opportunity to have input into the process much the same way they do in the Right-of-Way Worker Protection Task Force.
Go on to the next one.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes, please.
Mission improper door openings on
mm-hmm.
So doors opening when they shouldn't be is the specific thing to focus
yes.
on. What about doors that don't open? Is that something that...
That is part of the larger issue. You have
risk, but it's a risk.
Yes. It's obviously it's an inconvenience to customers who might want to get off at that station, but it's also a potential concern from an evacuation point of view. There's two components to that. There's a car-borne equipment component. There's also the component of during improper door openings, whether or not those individuals or the operators are checking out the window and monitoring the system the way they should. But in general, part of the reason we put that on there was because during the FTA audit, for example, FTA identified when they went through that the hazard classification of door openings was classified as infrequent, improbable. Obviously, it's something that happens on a regular basis. It is something that, well, I wouldn't call it unavoidable, but difficult to avoid in a system that relies on human beings, and human beings occasionally have human error. But it's something that we want to make sure Metro is actively tracking and actively evaluating. So that's why we mentioned that. Thank you. And at this point, I or George would be very open to any questions or
let me ask you a general question.
Sure.
Compared to when you came here 6 months ago, whatever it was now, the first time last fall.
Yes.
What is your general feeling about the atmosphere, about the relationship between your organization, your agency, and this agency here as well, your business? Has it improved?
My perspective is yes, there's been significant progress made. I would be hesitant in saying that it's been all the problems in the world have been fixed because I think there's still a lot of progress that we need to make on a lot of issues. I would say that the responsiveness from WMATA in terms of our requests for information, the priority they give them, and the information that we get has all been improved significantly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's been noted by me on a couple occasions, but also the subcommittee and audits and investigations, the need for a master centralized tracking system. And of course, we already know you're heading in that direction, Chief. But we want to put it in a resolution so it's perfectly clear to everyone how seriously we think this issue is in tracking and keeping track of not only what's been reported in audits and investigations, but certainly follow-up and corrective action plans being implemented. So as a result, I'm moving that the draft resolution titled Tracking of Safety Findings and Recommendations by Oversight Agency be introduced or be presented to the full board for approval. You want me to read this, or?
I don't know
if
you need to read it.
Okay.
I have read it.
Okay.
Copies of it available to
yes. I believe it was handed out by Lloyd earlier. Basically, it has two elements to it. One is a resolve for the general manager and staff to develop and design a mechanism for tracking all safety findings from oversight agencies, including TOC, NTSB, FTA, et cetera. And certainly providing periodic reports, in this case quarterly reports, to this committee on that action, and also informing this committee if there's any problems associated with the status of findings when they occur. You know, delays, omissions, we want to hear about it not at the quarterly meeting, but when they happen or when the concern is raised. There's a second part of this which also passed the Inspector General, who reports to the board and her staff, to track continuously these safety findings and working with, the intent is working with the Office of Safety or whoever the GM designates to kind of monitor continuously these reporting systems. And that's basically the elements of this draft resolution, which I move.
Second.
Mr. Chancola moves the committee forward to the board with a recommendation for approval, I presume, and Mr. Benjamin second. Let me ask on the two major parts of this resolution, Mr. Chancola. One to ask the general manager and staff, one to the inspector general. Would I be correct in assuming that the mechanisms you're asking commensurable so that one would parallel the other? In other words, so that if one looks at the general manager's report on these, the mechanism for tracking all that, one could then look at the inspector general's.
Well, the intent was would be to use the reporting system designed by the general manager. In other words, she and her staff would be monitoring that particular report.
And reporting to us specifically on, you know, yes, yes, no, maybe yes.
And by the way, we're having trouble with this one.
Right, exactly. Mr. Sarles, do you have any questions, comments, reactions?
No, it's fine with me. I think it's just fine.
Okay. I think this, I really appreciate your bringing this forward, Mr. Chancola, because one of the things that has concerned me is that we do, in fact, have so many different things going on at the same time. I'm sure it is challenging for staff to keep track of all these different parts. But in our oversight responsibility, it's particularly difficult for us and for the public, for that matter, without somehow this all being put together and laid over some kind of schedule. One of the earlier part we had in this meeting, we had the report the chief gave about the, you know, the 10 specific things coming out of a particular FTA report, and that was very good. But you know, that's complicated enough. That's one dictate from one federal agency on one occasion, and it has these 10 different things plus five or six others. Getting all this together in a way that everybody can see it is going to be really important. People to be able to have some confidence that what needs to be done is being done. So I strongly support this. There's one other thing that I would like to mention, though, that is not here, and I don't know whether or not it's in parallel to this. We had a conversation at a recent meeting about whistleblower protection. And I think we still have some unfinished business there. I believe that there was something due to come back to us. Okay. Will that go to the board at the same time as this?
There was a resolution that was considered by the parallel committee.
Okay. So that may answer my question. I just wanted to make sure we move forward on that along with this, because I think that's another important component. So I'll look forward to seeing that then before the board. Further questions or comments?
I had one comment. As far as the board wanting to be, as far as this resolution, another big part of the things that the TOC tracks are WMATA's own investigations and corrective actions from their own investigations and hazardous conditions. And I mean, I'm sure that would all be part of this database, but this resolution didn't mention that.
The et cetera.
Okay. All right. It said oversight agencies. That's why I brought it up.
Sorry, I'm not sure I follow. What's missing?
Yeah, it was talking about findings from oversight agencies, but it should also, I would think you'd want to know about from internal findings that you have yourself.
From internal findings of WMATA.
Such as your internal safety audit program.
Okay. Is there any reason not to include a specific reference to?
Well, there may be more than one type of system we're reporting this on. That's why we included the et cetera in there. So. If we want to do that, we can do that.
We could modify it slightly and say recommendations, including those made by
internal.
Well, no, if you just do, it's all safety findings and recommendations. That includes ourselves,
right,
including those made by various oversight.
Just moving the word over there.
That amendment
reads a little
better. I think that amendment is certainly acceptable to me.
I would ask for one other, which is in the final version, when this is the first report, we spell out the agencies that are shown by officials. Oh, I'm sorry. Actually, that's done above.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Okay, I withdraw it.
Just, I suppose, a quick clarification. I guess this is intended only to track corrective actions and not the status of open accident investigations, for example.
The resolution?
Yes, that's what I mean.
I think you
think it would cover both? I simply ask for clarification.
I mean, it says tracking all findings and recommendations, so I would interpret that as meaning the kind of thing you were doing, where it's saying that we have this open and we have these actions.
Okay.
So that's the way I would interpret it.
Yes, that's my only question.
Is that it?
Thank you for the opportunity to